We know it's the middle of summer. You've been taking vacation. You've been worrying about buying school clothes and other materials for the kids. But there's an election on Tuesday, August 12th. So to talk about that election, we've asked Kevin Kennedy, Director and General Counsel of the Government Accountability Board, to give us an update. Now this is our second August primary, correct?
That's right, Steve.
Well, anybody interested? We've got other things on our mind, my friend.
Well, we do, but you know, we have these partisan primaries all the time. You know, they're a low turnout election. They're for the people who are really dedicated, people who strongly identify with one political party, because it's the nominating process. It decides who gets on the ballot for November. Some states started this in March. People are doing it in June, July. Wisconsin used to do it along with 10 other states in September. But it was moved to August to ensure that there's plenty of time for ballots to be delivered to our military and overseas voters.
Okay. Well, since this is our second August primary, did you notice any drop-off from the what had been our September primary to August?
No real change.
Voter numbers?
No real change.
No?
Again, it's because the people who are really following closely the elections in at the primary level, they're closely identified in their own political world. Also people who are habitual voters, people who show up for every election no matter what, take the time to become
habitual
informed.
Habitual voters, you make it sound like it's a pejorative term.
that's
a curious term.
It's a good thing
to be a habitual voter.
It is.
Well, you traditionally make the calls. What percentage of eligible voters are you predicting?
We're looking at about 15%, which is fairly common. We've had that before for the September primaries. You know, there's not a lot of action at the top of the ticket.
There isn't.
Attorney general race, we got a partisan primary on the
Democratic side.
You know, we have a congressional, highly contested partisan primary going on in the 6th.
6th CD.
So there are pockets, a number of legislative races where there are open seats, so you'll see hotly contested. But there's really nothing driving this statewide.
There's no statewide advisory referendums?
That's right.
There's no constitutional amendments on the primary ballot?
Nope. We'd never see them on the primary ballot.
No, that's true.
We'll see one in November.
Okay. Okay. Well, are there any changes to voter registration laws before August 12th primary, sir?
There are some changes. Now, everyone who registers to vote has to provide proof of residence. We're in that time period where they'd have to...
That's new, right?
That's new for people who registered by mail or registered outside of the 20-day window.
Okay.
For people who register late... Right now, when they go to the clerk's office or at the polls on election day, they've always had to provide proof of residence.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people, if they just mailed in a registration card a month or so ago and they did not provide the clerk with proof of residence, they should have got a follow-up card saying you're not going to be on the voter list until you give us a document that establishes that you live at the address.
Can I send in that document, or do I have to present it in person, Kevin?
You can mail in a copy of it.
Okay.
We would encourage you not to mail in the original.
Right.
On it, but they can be mailed in, and like I said, you need to have that in order to get a ballot.
And what type of documents can I send in?
The most common document that you need, and this is just to register, is usually people's driver's license or the state-issued ID card, but statements from a financial institution, utility bills, student ID cards if they meet certain requirements.
If they actually list their residence?
Student ID card, there's a two- or three-step process that has to go into that process. And we would encourage people to look at our website to get all the details. But this is... if you're not registered now and you go in to vote absentee in the clerk's office, or if you show up at the polls, you'll need this. People who registered, if you got a communication from your clerk saying, we need this document, they will tell you to send it in. If you have already been registered, you're fine.
Okay. And if you haven't moved, what if you moved?
If you've moved, you need to have lived 28 days before the August 12th election, so roughly July 16th. 17th is if you've moved since then, you have to vote at your old location, not at your new location.
Well, I was thinking about this too as I got ready for the show, and with the exception of maybe collective bargaining, election laws have been one of the most debated topics in the Capitol over the last 3 years. So my bottom line question, can you still register to vote on the same day in Wisconsin?
And the answer is yes.
Okay.
We've had that.
That is not, all right.
We've had that since 76, and it hasn't changed.
And the documents that you have to personally present are basically what the ones you just outlined, right?
That's right.
Okay. Okay. Well, last week, the state Supreme Court upheld a law saying you have to show a photo ID to vote. Is that in effect for August 12th primary?
That is not in effect for the August 12th primary. And that's because, you know, we had four lawsuits, two at the federal level, two at the state level. The state level ones were resolved last week, and the court basically upheld them. Does require the Department of Transportation to take some additional steps if people don't have the required supporting documentation to get that photo ID. Otherwise, we're still on hold with the federal level. And the Attorney General's office has asked the court to lift that hold, but it's, you know, the federal court ruled against the ID this past spring.
Right.
It's on appeal. Arguments will happen this fall. Unless the court removes the stay on that, it will not be in place. But ask me again closer to the election.
Closer to November 4. Right. And the backdrop of that is over the weekend, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss told Mike Goucher there's a chance, a possibility, that we could have a photo ID law in place by November 4. Do you want to respond?
Oh, I did note. I thought he said it was a remote possibility.
Remote. Okay.
You know, and it's something we're getting a communication out to clerks. We got a set of frequently asked questions for the poll workers. They'll be on our website. Basically says, stay tuned. We'll let you know. There was a lot of publicity. We know people's interest has peaked. But if you don't see ads or communications coming out, coverage saying, bring a photo ID, at this point, it's the status quo the way it's been.
Okay. I notice on your website, can I go to your website and check whether I'm properly registered now?
Absolutely.
Okay. And do a promo. Give your website.
Well, MyVoteWisconsin, myvote.wi.gov,
all right,
is really the best place to go. It not only tells you, you just type in your name and mm-hmm. your date of birth, mm-hmm. Where it prompts you to. It will tell you if you're currently registered. It will tell you, you can look up your voting history if you want, but it will also tell you who's on the ballot, where you're going to vote, where your polling place is located, and where your municipal clerk's office is.
Can I look up how often my neighbors vote?
The only way you can look that up, it's all a public record, but in order to get their voting history, you have to have their name and their date of birth.
Oh.
You can make a public records request.
No, I don't want to do that. No, I don't want to go that far. I was just curious.
Sure. We make that available to people,
okay,
because the law permits it.
Okay, but August 12th is a primary election. Now, what that means is I have to vote either a Democrat or a GOP ballot, correct?
Well, there's actually three choices.
Okay.
In the primary, we have three parties with ballot status: the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, and the Constitution Party. Not many candidates, no primaries on the Constitution side, but you could go in and vote for a Constitution Party candidate. You can only vote in one party or the other.
So I have to decide Dem, Repub, or Constitution.
That's right.
Are there any primaries on the Constitution side?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, then my next question is, if I choose, if I'm a Democrat or a Republican for a day, is there any permanent record kept of that?
No.
Anybody know?
They're not. This is what we call an open primary. You can make that choice, but we call it open, but it means nobody knows your choice. If it was a closed primary, when you register to vote, you'd be registering as a Republican or a Democrat. You'd be handed the ballot when you came in. You'd always have that public record associated. We don't have that in Wisconsin. I don't anticipate that we will ever have that kind of requirement.
When I lived in Iowa, people had to register their party affiliation, Democrat, Republican, Independent, right?
That's right.
Do most states have that? Because we do not. Let's be sure Wisconsin does not.
Wisconsin does not, and it's about 50-50. Probably more states don't have the requirement than do, but it's a pretty even split.
Okay. What about if I want to vote absentee? Now, it seems to me there's laws that have changed this process. Can you summarize those, please?
Well, the law that's changed is the in-person absentee. If you wanted to have your absentee ballot mailed to you, since late June, 45 days before the election, you could have had a ballot mailed to you and returned it. And again, that's to make sure that our military and overseas voters get as much of an opportunity to participate as possible. However, if you want to vote in person, it's limited to just the 2 weeks, and it's on weekdays, not regular business days, not the weekends, before the election. So that started last Monday, and it continues through the Friday before the election?
Our largest cities, Milwaukee and Madison, they've been open, the clerk's office have been open on the weekends. Is that no longer allowed?
That's no longer allowed. It used to be that we had voting right up until the day before the election. We got rid of the Saturday, Sunday, Monday before the election, before 2012. Now the weekend in between those 2 weeks is also not permitted, nor had we had a holiday during that time period. Would you be allowed to cast that? That would really only show up if we had a special election.
Well, what intrigues me is you've been seeing more and more people casting these type of ballots, haven't you?
That's right.
In 2010 and 2012 elections, some of the top of the ticket, what percentage of those ballots were cast absentee?
Well, it keeps getting bigger, and it's usually the November. It's the presidential elections that really drive it. So we were at close to 25% in 2012. We were about 22% in 2008.
25%?
Yeah, 2012. One in every four.
Okay.
But some of those were, again, mailed in, but most of them were in person. So we actually had more people voting when there was less hours in 2012 than we did in 2008. The other thing is that in off-year election, the absentees are well behind. We're not going to break 20% in absentee voting come November. And certainly in the next week's primary, we won't come close to that either.
But somebody who's used to voting absentee, with these new changes, what's the biggest change that might catch them, throw them off in this cycle?
The biggest change really is that they won't be open after 7 o'clock at night, mm-hmm. And they won't be open on weekends. And usually, unless it was a presidential election, they weren't open much past 7 anyway, but the weekend voting was big.
Okay. Election observers are playing a more, we're seeing a lot more election observers. We've had some incredibly close elections, a record number of recalls. Who are those observers? They sit right, I go in, my name is, I now have to sign my name, but these election observers that sit behind the poll workers, who are they?
Wide range of groups of people. Both political parties have observers, not at every polling place. The League of Women Voters has hundreds of observers at the polls. Other groups strongly interested, either with a political slant or just a nonpartisan, how are the elections being run, we'll have groups there. Sometimes candidates in particular elections will get their people there. More often than not, they'll have them there after the polls close because they want those results called into them as quickly as possible. But in high traffic voting areas, mm-hmm. you're going to see observers, the larger cities in particular, not so much the rural areas. If you're in a swing district, you can expect to see observers. Any member of the public has the right under state law to be an observer, except a candidate. We have other states that it's very restrictive. You need a permit to get it. It's only issued to political party representatives or candidate representatives. In Wisconsin, actually used to have that provision, but we opened it up many, many years ago. So our process is very transparent in the sense that if you want to see how elections are run, anybody can be there. The main thing is you cannot disrupt the conduct that's going on there. You can't be a distraction, and you can't really harass the voters.
Is there no limit per polling place on the number of observers?
It's a practical limit,
okay.
And we usually don't see that. In other words, the first step is if you've got more representatives from more than one organization and it's too crowded, you'll weed it out that way. We really haven't had a problem with too many observers at a polling place in terms of taking up too much space, but we really struggle to get enough polling places, so some of them are smaller than others. We often use large gyms, which creates a lot of space, but it makes it difficult for the observers, quite frankly, because it sound just gets lost.
Well, there was a lot of recent discussion of how close that observer can be looking over the shoulder of the actual election worker. So what was the denouement, the resolution? How close can they be?
It's no closer than 3 feet, but there's a range of 3 to 8 feet where they should be. The legislature has expressed an interest. If they can't make that, we want to document that. Why couldn't you place them closer than 8 feet? If you're sitting behind the poll worker, because the 3 feet is measured between the the voter, if you're sitting behind the poll workers, you've got that 3 feet easily. That's, yeah. You know, you and I across the table here.
Can the observer stand up and literally look over the shoulder? Because that can be seen as pretty intimidating, can't it?
It can be disruptive. It's not unusual that they may stand up. In most cases, what they're interested, the observer's interested in, is the public aspects of the process. When the voter comes in, are they giving their name and their address? Many of these observers, you know, have a list of their hardcore participants. And if they don't show up to vote, they're going to run out at 4 o'clock and make a phone call saying,
hey. So it's part of the get out the vote.
That's really one of the incentives. The other one is to make sure that, again, people are doing their jobs as poll workers, that there is no playing fast and loose with the rules. And most of the reports we get back are like that. We do have some observers who think they know the law when they don't, and we have some poll workers who resent being told if they're not following the rules. So you try to find that balance.
Can an observer talk to a voter?
No.
Can a voter ask who an observer is there on behalf of?
I would say no, they should not.
Okay.
Basically, you know, most voters, when they come in, they're going to vote. We have a list. It's not publicly available on election day, but it is a public list that can be seen after the polls close.
A list of who?
Of observers.
Of observers. For
each polling place. When observers come in, they sign in. They're going to have a sticker that says election observer. It's not going to identify, you know.
Do they have to show a photo ID?
They do under the rules that we just put in place.
Oh. Well, that's fascinating. Okay, and we're seeing more and more observers, and if the election for governor is as close as it could be, we'll probably see a lot of observers on November 4, correct?
I think we'll see many more observers in November. A lot of times the partisan primary is used as sort of a training ground. Also helps them identify, again, high voting traffic areas and swing districts. Make sure that people really are following the rules.
You and I had a conversation once. This is the first election cycle that I can remember where whether photos can be taken at the polls has come up. What's the resolution there? Can anybody take a picture? Can a voter take a picture with a cell phone?
The answer is no. No pictures at the polling place. That's been our rule for a long time.
Voter cannot take it.
Voter cannot.
Election worker cannot take it. Observer cannot take it.
That's right. The only exceptions, the media. When they come in, and we have organizations that come in to assess, including our staff, a polling place for accessibility. So they'll document, they're not going to be taking pictures of voters, they're going to be taking pictures, you know, of the steps to make sure that there's a way around them if someone in a wheelchair needs them. That kind of, those are accepted from that, but primarily the media, and even the media, we you know, there's a caution with that. You know, if there's a voter who objects to being filmed, because it's really just stock footage that you're looking at.
Yeah.
And clearly it's, again, limited to the public aspects. You can't get into the booth. You can't take a picture. One of the problems you run into now is everyone has a camera in their pocket.
Yep.
And they're so proud to participate, they're going to show a picture of their ballot. But that is really an anti-fraud provision. If you can take a picture of your ballot, someone can then pay you for how you voted. So the law prohibits showing how you voted. That would include taking a picture.
Was this a big issue, taking pictures being taken at polling places in the 2012 elections? I'm curious, why did it suddenly arise?
Well, it arose because I think a lot of the observers felt like they wanted to be able to document what they saw as problems at the polling place.
Oh.
We've had this in our rules for a long time because the sense was, and this is even before, you know, cell phones made the camera everywhere, that people felt intimidated. They felt they were being watched. Much different, you know, when someone is holding out a camera and following you around on that. You know, it's a public process, but when you're being singled out, and that's really the concern. And its history really, really came out, not so much in Wisconsin, but in places where there had been discrimination, that photos were being taken, and the federal government said, we're not going to allow that. Where they had their federal observers in place, no pictures were going to be taken.
Well, in the social media era, what's been the most common complaint of voters? Is there one?
I'm not, you know, I'm not sure that I would say. I mean, obviously, voters don't want their pictures taken while they're standing in line or giving their name.
Mm-hmm.
But since we don't allow it, that really doesn't become a complaint.
Okay.
I think there is a sense, you know, that they'll see observers. We do let them, you know, use their phones to type in information, a tablet to document that information. And we want to encourage that, quite frankly. We want to encourage people taking notes. That's how our process improves. If we've got a poll worker who is obstinate, stuck in their ways, we want to know that so that person can be trained better or replaced if necessary.
Well, talk about poll workers. Who generally are they? Are they people that just do this for one or two days a year? And they are trained, but give us a demographic profile of the average poll worker.
You know, they get about an hour's worth of training before every election, but many of them have been there for a long time. Most of our poll workers are over 60, many of them over 70. We don't really have a breakdown by sex, but these are people who have some time on their hands and choose to participate in the process by making sure that you can vote. We have about 35,000 poll workers in a November presidential election.
Do they get paid any hourly stipend?
They do. They get at least a minimum wage. So most of them are getting over $100 a day. One of the things we do allow, and I would encourage people to think about this, is that poll workers don't have to work the full 13 hours plus opening and close down, you know, which could be 15 or 16 hour commitment.
Okay.
A lot of our larger cities, our law allows them to bring in shifts of poll workers. So you'll see in Madison and Milwaukee that people are only working, you know, 5 hours during the busy times. You'll always have someone who's there the whole day, but you know, that flexibility has really helped municipal clerks get additional workers, particularly at the large elections.
And now high school students can do that, can't they?
That's right.
Are we seeing them doing it in any great numbers, or hasn't it caught on yet?
You know, it's caught on. I mean, the first election we did this was 2002. Probably one of my proudest moments to walk into a polling place and see my daughter and my dad working together, both ends of the generation there.
Yeah.
You don't get a large number of them. Some municipalities are better at that. It's really a question of the municipal clerk who has to recruit these poll workers going out and finding them. You'll find Sun Prairie in Dane County, for example, has a large number of high school poll workers. Madison. We have several polling places, but there's a number scattered throughout the city.
If I'm a voter and I'm upset with the way something was handled, who should I talk to? The poll worker who takes my name and address? Don't engage the election observer? Who?
If you have a problem at the polling place, for the voter, we say ask to speak to the chief inspector. That's the poll worker who's in charge.
Is there one of those always on duty?
There's always one on duty, and they will designate someone if they're busy. So first thing, can I talk to the chief inspector? Here's the problem. You know, maybe they think there's an observer with a camera. Maybe they feel like that someone is wearing an inappropriate button on that, rather than create the disturbance.
That's right. You're not allowed to wear anything with the candidate's name? Or
that's right. You can't. What the law says is you can't engage in electioneering.
So voters can't, poll workers can't, observers can't.
That's right.
Okay.
So nothing that tends to influence voting at the election. It's a pretty broad term. In most cases, you know, people, if someone has a button on, nobody notices it, but if they do, the point is please take it off. If they have a t-shirt on, you know, can you put, you know, they might offer them a coat,
okay,
a little harder in August,
yep,
for something,
yep,
like that. It's not usually a problem, but once in a while you will get people who want to flaunt their support for a candidate, and you know, it begins. One of the challenges we have for our poll workers is this is a people management issue. How do you politely tell someone you don't want to draw attention to yourself, you don't want to create a disturbance, you don't want to be a distraction at the polling place? Our volunteer poll workers, they're getting paid but not much and doing this part-time, are often challenged, you know, particularly if it's been a long day for them, to deal with people who want to assert,
yes,
their views.
But a voter who has a question should ask for the chief inspector?
That's right.
And if that voter, she or he, is not satisfied?
Then they should call the municipal clerk.
Okay.
They can also call our office.
Okay.
And we have a hotline, 866-VOTE-WIS.
866-VOTE-WIS. Go ahead.
VOTE-WIS.
Good.
Is our hotline. You can call that on election day. We have extended hours. We're there till 10 or 11 o'clock at night on election night, depending, you know, probably 10 o'clock for August, 11 o'clock in November.
Mm-hmm. So give us the overview there. How many registered voters in Wisconsin?
We have about 4.3 million registered voters.
4.3 million, and they're voting at how many polling places?
They're voting in just under 2,800 polling places.
2,800 polling places. Yeah. Are any of these things that we discussed likely to change before the November 4 election?
The only thing that we can see a possibility of change, as we talked about, is if the courts lift the ban on voter ID.
Photo ID?
And then, you know, the earlier they do that, the better, if it's going to happen, because you needed to vote absentee.
Okay. Any other common Q&A questions that we haven't covered in the vote process? Tuesday's election, August 12th?
I don't think so, other than, you know, it's a low turnout election. As we talked about, it's a partisan primary election. But because it's a low turnout election, every vote counts.
Okay.
As it does in any election. But if only 15% of the people are going, if you get there and make it 15.1, mm-hmm. all the better.
Okay. And update us on this other issue. The legislature voted for an audit of GAB. There was an attorney general's opinion that the investigation, your confidential files, cannot be shared with auditors. Is the audit going forward? Can you update us?
Yes, the audit is definitely going forward. It's a comprehensive program audit. It's something, you know, I think any administrator embraces. They might dread it a little bit because and our audit bureau has a tremendous reputation for the positive, because they'll go in and they're very thorough, and they're going to find things that you don't see, and they're going to say, you know, you need to do a better job of record keeping here, or we notice that you have this requirement. Why aren't you getting this done? Audits by themselves usually don't single someone out for praise. They're mm-hmm. going to look at, you know, did you meet all of your benchmarks?
Was this a concern when the GAB was created, Kevin, whether these investigative files should be made public ever?
Yes, this was a big issue when they created the GAB. You know, I used to work for the former State Elections Board, and none of our records were closed. And I say that except for once we were involved in litigation or as we were conducting an actual investigation. But the hearing, the complaints, the answers were all public. And the legislature made that decision because they saw it as something that, one, was being used for political purposes, and two, we've always had a confidentiality requirement for people seeking advice for ethics information that now extends to people seeking advice for campaign finance and lobbying as well. But the idea is to encourage that advice. That's the public policy behind it, but they made it very tight. No records except in very limited circumstances. And when the audit came in, you know, when it started, we sat down with the audit bureau and said, we think we have a problem with this. I'm going to go to the Attorney General's office and ask for some direction on that. It took them a while to wrestle with this problem, but as they read the statutes, as the Attorney General read the statutes, said, it can't be done, not even for the audit bureau, who you would expect would stand in the shoes right. of the agency. I expect that that'll get revisited next year.
Okay. Well, the final question on that, do you think the Attorney General's ruling will cripple the auditor's ability to do a complete and thorough evaluation?
No, because the information that they're looking at, you know, that they don't really have access to, has more to do with, has more to do with the conduct of the investigations. And an audit is really looking at how do you run your programs.
Okay, very good. Well, Kevin Kennedy, Director and General Counsel, Government Accountability Board, thanks for talking about the most common Q's and A's with the August 12th primary. Thank you very much. And voters, we know you're busy, but there's an election August 12th. See you at the polls. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.